You are listening to the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation, a national nonprofit organization founded on the mission that every pregnancy deserves a happy ending. Find us online at starlegacyfoundation.org. Our guest for this episode is a pretty incredible woman. She endured 10 years of pregnancy challenges, including stillbirth and the roller coaster of infertility. At the time, she worked in human resources. But after the pregnancy phase of her life was over, she made a big and meaningful career change. Debbie Fisher is now a therapist based in Minnesota, and she works primarily with people struggling with infertility or who have experienced pregnancy loss. Well, Debbie, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
My first question for you is, you work in a very specific field of therapy, and I'd love to know what led you to this. What happened in your life and your career that led you to this very specific field?
Sure. Thank you for asking. So it was my personal experience that led me to a career change. I spent the first 20 years of my career in human resources. Most recently, I was the director of HR for an ad agency in downtown Minneapolis. And along the way, life happened, and I was always drawn to a helping field, which is a large part of why I went into HR. But my path into parenthood, my journey to becoming a parent, was difficult at best. We lost our first son full term to stillbirth. He was conceived without any fertility help. And then following that loss, then we struggled with secondary infertility. And so in total, I went through 11 rounds of fertility treatments. I had two sons who were stillborn 4 years apart. I had a miscarriage. It was a 10-year journey. And after all of that, I just had to take a step back and say, all right, all of this happened. It was awful. I thankfully have three beautiful children that are living. And what can I do with this? And so I chose to change careers. And I went back to school when my twins were one. And I decided to become a marriage and family therapist and to focus specifically on infant loss and infertility and assisted reproduction.
Thank you for sharing that with me. That brings me to a follow-up question. There are so many women and men who go through hell with infertility, experience pregnancy loss, whatever it may be, and they go back to their jobs and they don't view it the same way as they did before. They don't find the passion and the importance that they once had. But you're kind of a case study and a success story of someone who takes all this passion and everything you learned in these 10 years of struggles, and you're putting it to good use. What advice do you have, or what inspirational words do you have for mothers or fathers who may want to do something with their grief, but they're not sure what to do with it?
It's very common. It's a very common response. I'm originally from New York. My father's a firefighter. When 9/11 happened, I just had this thought of, oh my gosh, nothing. I was working for Walt Disney World, and I said, I can't be happy right now. I work for the happiest place on earth, and that's not life. And I felt this draw that I needed to go back to New York. I needed to do something. But after the dust settled a bit and I was able to sort of compose my thoughts and my feelings, I realized maybe that wasn't the next best thing for me to do. And it happens with, I think, a lot of trauma. And so what I would encourage folks is to really work their way through the trauma first and to work on themselves first before they make an immediate decision. So often we just want to sort of immediately jump into something to do, and that's out of a really good place, but we need to make sure that we've healed first. There's no way that I could do the work that I'm doing right now if I hadn't completed my healing journey, and certainly there's always stuff for me to learn and to work on, but I couldn't bring that into therapy with others.
Talk to me about your typical client. Who is a typical client of yours, and what are the biggest challenges? What is the reason they come to see you in the first place?
Sure. Well, clients will come for a variety of reasons. They'll come because they're seeking therapy after having a stillbirth or an infant loss or recurrent miscarriage, or they'll come for infertility because they're struggling with infertility, or they're in the decision-making process, or they're working with donor genetics, or they're working with a gestational carrier. So depends on, what you want to focus on. If we want to focus on infertility, I can talk about that specific population. Yeah, so folks who will come to me through infertility, they might be in the earlier stages of it, and they come in with a partner, or oftentimes, unfortunately, individually. And I encourage folks to come in as couples if they are coupled. So to sort of seek advice through trouble that they might be having in their marriage or with their extended families as a result of the additional strain of infertility. Or they'll come to talk about decision making and they're struggling with what do we do next and how much money can we afford to spend and what are all the treatment options and, you know, where how do we make these decisions? Or they also might be coming to me because they've made the decision. They've made the decision to use donor genetics, and it's part of the process under the American Society for Reproductive Medicine. It's a best practice to see somebody on the to talk about the long and the short-term implications to make sure there's alignment with the couple before they proceed with making a decision to use donor genetics or to work with a gestational carrier.
I know therapists aren't supposed to talk about themselves with their clients too much, but you may be a rare case where it might be beneficial for your clients to know what you've been through. Is there any, what's the line there? Is there any value in you kind of sharing your story to give yourself a little more credibility and build trust with your clients?
Yeah, you know, I think it depends on the individuals and the couples that I'm working with. I am open about it. I put it in my bio. I don't necessarily give all the details that I shared with you specifically. But I do indicate that I'm a bereaved parent that struggled with infertility. And so a lot of times folks do find their way to me because they know that I've had a similar journey. And I won't bring it up unless I ask first or if they ask me. And if they do ask me, I ask, you know, okay, why do you think that this might be helpful or do you feel like this might be helpful to hear a little bit? And so it does come up often, and I don't mind sharing if it's beneficial to the clients.
Let's tap into a little bit more, what are the common concerns from couples who are experiencing infertility issues, whether it's a couple or an individual coming to you. What are some of the themes and the common concerns, and then how do you address some of these concerns?
Sure. So infertility affects 1 in 8 couples. So it's a significant amount of the population that's affected, and yet like stillbirth, it's still so isolating. We don't talk about it enough, and so a lot of times, and it's a very private thing, and it's personal, and so couples who are struggling with this oftentimes feel alone. They don't know who to talk to. They don't necessarily want to open up with friends and family who then might become nosy and curious and ask more, and they're not ready to share those thoughts and feelings with them. So for one, a lot of times they close themselves off. So that's part of it. Additionally, you know, I don't know that the folks really recognize how much strain and stress and anxiety and depression is related to infertility. And in fact, the research has shown that women who struggle with infertility suffer the same amount of anxiety and depression as women who are undergoing cancer treatment. And I don't know that people really recognize just how significant it is. So as far as couples, you know, there's lots of things. It affects their sex life. Sex becomes a chore, and that's difficult for a lot of couples. There's financial strain. I mean, especially when you're undergoing fertility treatment, and where do you draw the line? And one may want to just keep putting more and more into it, and the other is saying, wait a minute, we're not going to have any money then after. And so there's that piece of it. As they're considering treatment options, the finances may come into play, or they oftentimes do, but then also maybe religious implications, and maybe they're on different pages around where they are from a faith perspective and what makes sense from their faith perspective. A lot of times families, if they are aware, they may try to be helpful, and that causes more strain to the couple when their help isn't so helpful. There may be shame, so if there's one that they can, that's sort of, you know, the one who's having the trouble. So if it's male factor, if it's female factor, and so there might be shame associated with that, or they might feel like it's my fault, or they might feel it's my fault and my partner's going to leave me. So there's a lot of stress that accompanies infertility.
Given everything you just said, if there's someone listening to this podcast who may be struggling with infertility, who may not be thinking about therapy as something that they need because they're so focused on the physical part of infertility, what would you say to them?
Yeah, you know, there's a stigma that goes with therapy as well, right? And that's unfortunate, but that's the reality. And I would encourage them to look past that if they're not comfortable speaking with others about infertility, then maybe take a look at some sites. Take a look at Resolve, for example, the National Infertility Association. Take a look at others to see what their journeys have been like. And I think that they'll see that they're not alone in those feelings and that people underestimate the emotional toll and the toll on the relationship. And from there, maybe make a more informed decision whether therapy is the right thing for them. But I would really encourage folks to take a look at therapy as part of, if they're going through this, then have that as part of their journey. They need help to go through it. It's a hard thing to go through alone.
You've mentioned a couple times that you work with couples who are struggling with infertility and those who have had a stillbirth. What similarities do you see between couples who have struggled with infertility as well as a stillbirth, neonatal death, or other poor outcome later in pregnancy? In addition to similarities, what differences do you see?
Sure. So similarities, it's grief and loss. I mean, it's very consistent. There's grief and loss associated with both. With infertility, as in perinatal loss, there's this feeling that your body has let you down. Your body's not doing the things that it's supposed to do, that you were told it was going to do. That's a commonality or a similarity between the two. There's the piece that, you know, for anybody who has struggled with infertility or has had stillbirth or miscarriage or loss in that sense, that it seems like everyone else around us is getting pregnant easily and their babies are living and it feels unfair. It is unfair. And so it's often hard, you know, to be happy for others and that brings on guilt too. Why do I feel awful? I hate that woman for being pregnant. We don't really hate them for being pregnant. We don't hate them that their baby is alive, but it hurts. And then there's this mix of emotion that goes with that as well. So there's a lot of similarities between the two. As far as differences, and you don't have to answer that, but I would throw it back to you. I mean, really, what differences do you see? One is with stillbirth, it's tangible, right? We've held this baby in our arms. We've buried a child. It's a tangible loss. But with infertility, it's ambiguous. It's the loss of what could have been. It's the loss of a dream. And so there's still that same kind of a death of a dream that goes with both of them. So I have a hard time distinguishing differences between the two. The one thing that I will say is that there is this perception, I think, that sometimes occurs among that there is a difference between the two. And I really want to encourage people to kind of take a look at each other's situations and imagine themselves in that for just a moment, because we need to stop with the shoulds, right, or at leasts. So I've been in both communities. I'll only speak for myself personally, but in the stillbirth community, it's if we look to folks who are struggling with infertility, well, at least you didn't bury a baby. At least you didn't have to, you know, say goodbye to your child. And in the infertility, it's at least you know what it's like to experience a pregnancy. At least you got to feel your baby move. At least you got to experience this. I'll never get that, or I haven't had that. So I really want to encourage, let's take the shame out of it. Let's stop with the at least. Take a look at what Brené Brown has to say about at least and empathy. And just kind of imagine that from the other person's perspective so we can all be supportive of one another.
Since you turned the question around on me, I will say that my wife and I experienced a stillbirth, and I have a friend who he and his wife were having years and years of infertility struggles. And one thing he said to me that has always stuck with me, that I completely agree with, is he said, there is no place in this world for people who have had challenging pregnancy journeys, because pregnancy is such a joyful thing, and there's pregnancy announcements on Facebook happening everywhere, and babies are cute, and it's just so fun and joyful. But if you're having struggles with it, you're kind of isolated and sitting in this dark corner where no one wants to talk to you, because there's no place for that.
Yeah. And the other thing that I'll add to that is this perception that men grieve differently. That's the other piece. Men grieve. Women grieve and men grieve, and that's period. That's the end of it, right? And so to stop with this, men grieve differently. Men are grieving and women are grieving.
It is not uncommon for couples to have trouble with fertility after stillbirth, even if they didn't have fertility concerns before that baby. How is your work with these families able to address the complexities they are facing?
Yeah, it's insult to injury, right? And on top of it, you know, when you have a stillbirth and if you join, if you find your way to a community of individuals that have had a similar experience, there's community there. And oftentimes when we're part of those communities, now we're watching others in our community go on and to have their rainbow babies or to become pregnant again. And as you're the person that's now struggling with secondary infertility and you're sitting and you're watching one after another, there's this feeling of I've lost my community and who do I turn to now? And that community of secondary infertility just really gets shut down. And while they're rejoicing and all of their peers going on to have their next pregnancy, their subsequent pregnancy, they're sitting and suffering in isolation. Why is this happening to me? So that's another component is now they've lost their support system potentially as well. So as far as working with couples, it's working through all the different feelings that encompasses that. And one of the things that's going to be really hard, you know, maybe for them to even find hope again, and it might not be necessarily the hope for another pregnancy, but just hope in general. So it's working through the anger, the frustration, the guilt. And when we talk about anger, I mean, so often that's what we see. The anger is at the surface, and that's what's just coming out full force, and that's affecting their relationships with their spouse, with their, you know, friends, with their family. But it's not about anger. It's really about what's underlying the anger. So we work to sort of, you know, unpack all of this and peel back the layers and go, okay, what's fueling this anger? You know, the sorrow and the grief and the feeling alone and feeling isolated and it's not fair, all those feelings, and we kind of really need to work on tackling all of those.
How rare are you? And by that, I mean, there are people listening to this podcast in other states. You're in Minnesota, obviously. When people are struggling with infertility or following a stillbirth or pregnancy loss, oftentimes there's support groups that are available, but oftentimes they want an individual therapist. How rare are people like you in other states and around the country of people who are specially focused and dedicated to working with people who have experienced infertility or a stillbirth?
Well, with folks that have a very specific understanding of infertility, especially that practice under ASRM guidelines, that are working with donor genetics, that are working with gestational carrier, it is lots of people who are therapists say, oh, I work in grief and loss, or I work in, I can handle infertility. And while there are wonderful therapists that do a great job and they don't have to have that particular specialty, there are pieces that are very important that we need to know about, especially under ASRM. And so, if you are struggling with infertility and you're looking for a therapist, or you, especially if you're going to be working with donor genetics or gestational carrier, I would really encourage you to look for somebody that practices under those guidelines. As far as the question, how rare am I? What I will say about that, it was a catalyst for my decision to change careers. That was another piece of it. And again, it's not that therapists who haven't had this specific experience aren't wonderful, but I can only speak for myself and my journey, and I know that I just so desperately wanted to be sitting across from somebody else that had experienced it, and not because we needed to talk about it, but I wanted to know I was going to be okay. I just wanted to look at them and know that I wasn't always going to be struggling so and be in such a dark place. And that was really the driver. I thought, I need to do this. I sat there, and if there's anything that I can do to help somebody else who is now in that position, I want to be sitting there and offering, you know, a hand or a shoulder.
What advice do you have for friends and family members of those who are dealing with infertility? How can they be supportive and helpful?
That is a great question, and thank you for asking. You know, just like with stillbirth, listen and let them know that you're there. And we have, you know, from stillbirth that lots of times there's well-intentioned advice or comments that are hurtful, and they don't mean to be hurtful, but they're not supportive at the time. So unless you have really great advice, and you know, if you're asked for it, great, but unless you have really great advice, be cautious on it. Talking about, hey, my cousin's sister's friend, or that didn't make a lot of sense, but you know, so-and-so's friend of a friend went through this treatment and that worked. I mean, that's not helpful. So really know what you're saying first. You know, avoid asking them if they're pregnant. If you know that they're undergoing fertility treatment, that's great. Be supportive, but stop. They'll tell you, believe me. If they're pregnant and they're ready to tell you, they're going to tell you. You don't need to continue to ask them. Respect their need for privacy. You know, reach out from time to time and let them know that you're there. But if they need to sort of be in their space for a while, then respect that and just check in every now and then. One of the biggest things that I'll say, though, that comes up so often, especially families, around family and around holiday, baby showers, and you probably know this too then from your experience with stillbirth, it's the same with infertility, right? Sometimes it's just really hard. You don't want to go to another baby shower. You're struggling to go to a holiday gathering because you know that your sister just had a new baby or there's going to be babies there, and it's really tough. But then there's fear of, well, if I don't go, my family is going to be mad at me, or they're not going to understand, or because this is a loss that's ambiguous. And people can't understand why that's a loss oftentimes, and so then our grief gets disenfranchised. But understand that people who are struggling with infertility are struggling, or they're suffering, and maybe they don't want to go to those events and those holiday gatherings. And if they do go, be respectful. And so if you do have a new baby, please don't bring your baby to them and expect that they want to hold them or they want to feed them. Also, if you yourself are pregnant and you have a friend or a loved one who's struggling to conceive, I know it's hard to sometimes go, hey, I'm pregnant, right? But it's better that they hear it from you usually than that they find out another way. So be respectful, share your news, but also acknowledge that this must be painful for that individual.
I think my final question for you is, you've talked a little bit about these topics being taboo, stillbirth, infertility. It's not talked about that much. Is it just me, or are we making some progress here? Is social media helping people talk about this stuff and get it out there? Are we making just little baby steps of progress where maybe compared to our parents' generation that we're talking about this stuff a little bit more and it's not as taboo as it used to be?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'll tell you, with social media, it's also this generation. So my first loss was 15 years ago, and that was before Facebook. And that was before there were social media groups. They were just starting then, and I felt really alone. And it's amazing to see where things have come in the 15 years. And yes, we do need to make a ton of progress, but there's a lot more accessibility. There's a lot more support out there. I love the way this generation is grieving out loud, and that they are not quiet about it, and that they are reaching out to others, and the community of support has really changed significantly in the 15 years since I had my first loss. So yes, I do think that we're making progress, and I really hope I can see that things will continue to change, and I hope that they continue to go in that direction. I think that they will.
Do you have any concluding thoughts, or is there anything else you wanted to say that we have not yet covered?
You know, I think it's just that if you're struggling with infertility, what the advice that I would offer to you is that certainly, you know, start with your OBGYN, but understand that while they are wonderful in so much, they're not specialists in infertility. And so please consider going to specialists. And especially if you're nearing the age of 40 or if you're over the age of 40, don't wait. Go directly to the fertility clinic. Don't spend time with your OBGYN. You really need to seek the help of somebody that is a specialist in this field.
Well, Debbie, thank you so much for not only sharing your insights but also your personal journey with us. Really appreciated you having you on as a guest in the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Truly, it's an honor to be asked, and I really enjoyed our conversation today.
That's all for this episode of the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation. I'm Chris Duffy. Thanks for listening.